Line unmuted.
Good morning and welcome to the Sussex County Council meeting of March 19th, 24. First thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. At this time, I see no recommended change to today's agenda.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move.
Motion, Mr. Second. Mr. Schaefer, questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yeah.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
We have motion carried. We have the minutes of March 12th. Any questions, corrections, additions? No, stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Mr. President, I have no correspondence to report.
Any correspondence from council? Any correspondence from council? Now's the time for public comment. Mr. Guy, by signed up. Operator, would you check online, please, for public comment?
This time, there is no one on the line.
Thank you. We'll close public comment. Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President. A couple items to get to today. Starting with the recognition of retiree Joe Thomas. As you all know, Thomas has provided us notice of his impending retirement, and we wanted to recognize him today. It's a little early. We have a two-week break coming up, so we wanted to get him in before that time period. I have a tribute here and a plaque to present to Joe, and then I'd like to invite the entire council to come down up front and have a picture with Mr. Thomas. All right. I'll read the tribute. Sussex Council tribute, be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Joseph L. Thomas, Director of Emergency Operations, Operations Center for Devotion, Loyalty, and Excellence in serving Sussex County 36 years and 3 months. The Sussex County Council extends its congratulations and directs this tribute to be directed to Joseph L. Thomas with wishes of happiness. Health, signed Michael H. Vincent, Council President. And back here presented to Joseph L. Thomas by the Sussex County Council in grateful appreciation for 36 years of outstanding service. Congratulations, Joe, to you and your family.
I just wanted to real quickly say a couple things. First of all, what a run. I have my wife Brenda's with me. I remember going to her and saying one night, I'm going to be the director. I said, but I'm going to tell you now, the longest director has ever been with the county is 10 years. So in 10 years, I'm going to find a new job. That was 27 years ago. I never imagined that I'd be director for this long. And I just, it's impeccable just to stop and think. And here I'm getting choked up, and I'm not one to be that. These guys will tell you I'm cold-hearted, so.
That's what Brenda said.
Trust me, that's what she does say. But I wanted to thank County Council, previous council, supporting me through the years. I feel like we've done a lot of good things. We've put Sussex County on the map with our Emergency Operations Center and our Dispatch Center. Thank administration. I got thinking about it last night. I actually dealt with all four county administrators in my career at some point. So that's been a good thing. And thinking about it, and I gave Chip Guy some information last week. When we started, the 911 center was took 57,000 911 calls, batched 15,000 fire and EMS calls. That was 27. Last year, we did 124,000 calls, and we dispatched 104,000 police, fire, and EMS calls. So that's where we've come from in 27 years. So, and I couldn't do it by myself. I'm the director, and I'm the one that, you know, they all point the finger at me. But this group right here behind me, most of us have been together for almost 20 years. And you got to have a great team behind you, because you have to be able to hand off things and know it's going to be done. And this group behind me has been great to work with. We jokingly say we're second family, and we truly are, and we make things work. So with that, thank you. I truly appreciate the time. As the wife said, now it's time for us to enjoy some time together, which I don't know if she's going to like that or not in the end. But thank you for everything you've done for me and the support you've given me.
Well, certainly on behalf of council, thank you for the great job that you've done for this county. You really have. And I think people don't realize that you are probably the outlier from the fact that most counties in this country, the person that's the emergency operations director is not the 911 director. You filled two jobs. Most places have two people to do that. So congratulations on all you've done, all you've amazing some things you've accomplished out there.
Yes.
It really is.
Yes. But, and that, we've always tried to stay on the front of technology, and we are known across the country as some of the things that we do. And I think that's, you know, I think about the EMS division, and we all know how well EMS is. Well, we're doing some of the same things on the 911 side, and we're getting, you know, good recognition for it. So I think we've come a long way.
And certainly our residents benefit from that.
Yes, absolutely.
They don't realize that. You know, they don't, unless they have to call 911, they don't even think about 911. Or a storm comes or whatever happens. But seriously, you've done a great job, Joe. We appreciate everything you've done. And certainly good luck to you on your retirement and keeping Brenda occupied. But I'm sure she'll be happy. So, but thank you very, very much for all you've done this county. We appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Lost, you're still up.
Thank you. I'd just also like to echo what President Vincent said about, Joe, your services to the county and the people of the county. One of the things that, as administrator, you get to do when a storm is coming is to sit out at the EOC and literally watch the team work. And through Joe's leadership, you've created quite a legacy that very big shoes to fill. And the county, our residents and our visitors alike, we're better off with you as director when situations happened and we had to react to it, especially storm situations, whether it's hurricanes or snow situations. Joe and I spent many a mornings on the phone with President Vincent at 4 o'clock deciding whether or not to close the county or delay the opening because of the weather. So I'm sure you're going to miss those 4 o'clock phone calls.
Brenda's going to miss me getting up. She's going, why are you getting up? I got to get on a phone call.
But truly, your leadership, especially in those times of emergency when the center was operating and you were in charge of protecting our citizens and the residents and the visitors alike during those circumstances, certainly a legacy that is going to be hard to fill. So congratulations and thank you.
It almost sounded like, man, we should cancel retirement. Well, maybe.
Can I talk to her?
Yeah, no. I don't want that conversation. That's all right.
All right, thank you. Moving on, Mr. President, to the County Administrator's Report for March 19th. Item one, the Delaware State Police year-to-date activity report for February 2024 is attached, listing the number of violent crime and property crime arrests, as well as total traffic charges and corresponding arrests. In addition, DUI and total vehicle crashes investigated are listed. In total, there were 190 troopers assigned to Sussex County for the month of February. Item two, per the attached Engineering Department fact sheet, the following projects have received substantial completion. Windward Village, effective March 6th. Millville by the Sea, Tupelo Sands, formerly known as Roxana, effective March 7th. And item three, a reminder that county offices will be closed on Friday, March 29th to observe the Good Friday holiday. In addition, council will not meet on Tuesday, March 26th or April 2nd. The next regularly scheduled council meeting will be Tuesday, April 9th at 10 a.m. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jennings.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. The first item I have is the MOU for dog control. Just a little bit of history. The county council signed an MOU in December 2015 that transferred the county's authority of dog control to the Office of Animal Welfare beginning in 2016. The state of Delaware's authority of dog control was later formalized in Delaware Code in 2017, which moved the responsibility of dog control from Title IX, which is the county's, to Title 16 for the state. In 2021, the state of Delaware and the three counties signed a three-year dog control MOU. The MOU expires in June. The state is proposing another three-year MOU, which was attached in your packet. The pricing structure is still based on a per capita distribution among the three counties and the city of Wilmington. And just as an update, the other two counties and the city of Wilmington have approved their MOUs. The difference between the 2021 MOU and the new MOU is the allocation among the three counties. The allocation is based off of the 2022 population rather than the 2019's population. There's also a 3% escalation each of the next 2 years. The current cost of the county's MOU is $887,901. With the proposed cost in this MOU, it would go to $1,046,174, which is a $158,273 increase. We do have Christina Motoyoshi here with and Chief Mark Tobin from the Office of Animal Welfare. They're going to give you a presentation on what they do, and then I have a motion for your consideration after the presentation.
Well, come right on down. Come right on down. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Chief Mark Tobin from Delaware Animal Service. I appreciate your time, Council. I just wanted to just talk briefly about what we do and support for Sussex County. As was highlighted, that we established in 2016. Our mission is to make Delaware communities safer for animals through public safety and professional delivery of animal-related services, innovative problem-solving, and cooperative partnerships throughout the counties, throughout the state of Delaware. Our hours are from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and we work 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. during the weekends. We right now have 24 full-time officers, 7 part-time officers, and 7 part-time dispatchers that work out of our Newcastle campus. Our information and stuff is included on our phone. If you want to go to the next copy through our slides here.
I have to click it? Yeah, just hit enter or something.
There you go. Okay, there you go. Sorry about that. I can click.
You can do it.
All right, so let me get through that. Catch up here. What we do, stray dogs, dog at large, we go out to dangerous dogs, which unfortunately there's a lot of those going on in this date and time. Housing and care concerns, welfare checks, animal cruelty, rabies control. When someone gets bit, we investigate the circumstances and making sure that their certifications are up to date. Cats in peril, when they're injured or something, that we need to go and get them medical attention. We do police assist every day for police agencies throughout the state of Delaware. We do any type of search warrants, there's animal related, we would go out with Delaware State Police, Newcastle County Police to assist them. Emergency response 24/7 when's needed. When you look at their complaint services throughout, last year 6,625 new calls came into Sussex County. We had a new call service for 22,654 calls, which is up, I believe, through these calls through the years, which we'll see escalated about 52% since 16, the amount of increase in calls throughout the state. When we look at the kind of the pie chart, when we're looking at the state, Sussex County right now is about 29% of all our calls. As you can see, Newcastle County is the highest at 39%. And Kent County has been growing also in complaint load throughout the state. You can see this is a increase, and when you're looking through the numbers, is of about 53% increase of calls. Keep going up, unfortunately. Wish they were going down, but they continue to escalate upward. When we look at everything, some of the additional measures that we look at is return to owner in the field. That's a national measure. A lot of people want to make sure when they lose their dog if we can get it back, and we do a lot of work to make sure that we can get these dogs back to the owners with a 49%. But you can see that we've returned in the field over 600 animals in the field. And then at the shelter, once they're there, they're posted online, and then a return to them from the shelter, which is 1,000 last year. citations, you know, when we're going through statewide 99. We've had rabies control violations, about 2,000. And dangerous dog cases is another topic that we deal with a lot when animals unfortunately attack another one or a human, which happens quite a bit, unfortunately. When that does happen, if we feel like they do have any type of rabies that needs to be tested, we do transport them to the lab to get tested to make sure. So we do the transportation part, which we did about 155 last year. Dog license, which is another thing that we've been trying to get throughout the state, which is a big component with us. We sold about 29,848 licenses. Our key is to continue with that since it is a state law, and that revenue assists on the overall budget for everything. So more that buys a license, more it takes away from everything else. As you can see, that is something that we do talk about to every owner in the state, and we do spend quite a bit of time at all the parklands to try to talk to the public and, you know, give them education on those things. We do have a website, a functional website, that does cover if you do use your dog. We're one of the few states that have one website for the entire state. So anywhere in the state, if you lose your dog, you can go to one-stop shopping, just hopefully locate your dog. Our officers are trained to post it as soon as they get it so that the information is out there that you can locate your dog immediately. And then through that website, you can go into the other services which are associated to that site. Spay and neuter, we do low-income spay and neuter through their sites, and a lot of that can be done and accessed online to make it easier for everybody. Okay, well, but moving along. Another thing is our animal welfare office certification. So what I did was, you know, I'm retired from Newcastle County Police. I'm also a certified instructor, and I'm a national instructor when it comes to police dogs. I worked with Wilmington University to establish an animal control certification course that our officers go through an academy similar to the Delaware State Police in Newcastle County, Wilmington, that they get the education that's the same and similar that's instructed by all COPT certified instructors through their education. This was our first graduating class last fall. This was in Wilmington University. It goes through a six-week course of not only defensive tactics, but animal control, laws of arrest, de-escalation, which is a big thing, making sure that when we're talking to public, the emotions involved with animals are really high, and making sure that our officers can show compassion and not be confrontational, but get information in a calm way so that we can establish rapport and make the incident a lot easier so that for the public is educated on the laws and our officer can relate and develop more of a relationship with the people. We also do a lot of outreach, community outreach and constituent relations and conflict resolution. With the de-escalation, you know, a lot of our calls are frequent calls. We have a computer-aided dispatch system. So if we go to the same calls, it's highlighted we've been there before, and we try to come up with innovative solutions to try to figure out just a neighbor dispute, or is it something that we can do with this animal to help this to get through this. A lot of times these repeat calls are just neighbor conflict, they're tired of either parking or something, the dog's getting out, and we do understand it, respect it, and we try to come up with a solution so that we can move on through these things. Community engagement, one of the highlights from my staff, which I'm extremely proud of, in West Rehoboth, we had a community that, you know, a lot of people reached out to us and there's constant issues. So, you know, we've been there before, we've seized animals before, we've done enforcement. And I kind of went to this thing is like, how about we partner with Brandywine Valley, we go out, we take all the animals and see if we can get everybody up to code. We spent all day giving vaccines, we treated 41 animals, we gave out spay and neuter vouchers so they can get their animals, and we talked about education, shelter, straw and stuff to get them in code. That community is one of those hotbeds that are throughout the state, and we decided to go, and what we found is most of the community was extremely receptive to what we put out there. They loved the fact that we were out there trying to help them, and we built a great relationship with them that we can go to their house and say, hey, we need to fix this, and we feel like this relationship is going to build throughout our relationship in West Rehoboth. And these are the things that we're trying to do throughout the state to help these people with their animals that may not have the money to do it, but we can get them support, and maybe because they do love their animal, that we can fix it and make it a little better. We also go and do it with emergency response. This one was an accident out on 95. There was a transport of animals, on a Saturday. So I ran out and we got all these animals. We worked in conjunction with Christiana Fire Company, got all these animals off the highway, got them in there. We waited and coordinated with the out of state for them to come get these animals. My officers worked diligently to help with the rescue search to get all these animals, locate all these animals, and put them back to the fire company. And we worked to make sure that every one of these animals were, one, medically cleared. We had Brandywine Valley come in with their medical staff to check every single animal before they left the state to make sure that they were healthy. It was a heck of a undertaking, but the end result, all the animals were healthy going back to the state of New Jersey. Something, again, that I was extremely proud of the hard work of my staff that we went out and did. And our shelter services. So we do have a state contract with Brandywine Valley. Our officers is kind of a true law enforcement. We take it, and Brandywine Valley does all the medical workup on the animals. So we'll take that, put them in the shelter, and then they're our partner through all those services. Anyway, does Chris, you want to talk about that? Okay, so at this point, I'm going to go into the services part, and I'm going to have the director, Chris Modiyoshi, just talk about our partner, Brandywine. Unless you have any questions, thank you. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
We're good, I think.
Good morning.
I'm
Chris Modiyoshi. I'm the director for the Office of Animal Welfare. And Chief, I think, did a wonderful job kind of outlining what we do. Which one is it? This one? The right one. Okay, got it. For our shelter services, we do partner with Brandywine Valley SPCA. We have a contract with them. They do the statewide animal sheltering. They have an updated shelter in every county, and here in Sussex County, they have two shelters that they utilize. This has been a really beneficial relationship over the last, I guess it's been 8 years now, where we have seen much better care for the animals. And a much more positive outcome for the animals. They have a 90% live release rate. Their average length of stay is very low. So they're very progressive. They are very aggressive in getting animals into homes and having positive outcomes for those animals that we bring them and that the public brings them. And then in addition to what they do for us contractually through animal control, they have a host of services for the community, such as low-cost spay-neuter and wellness, vaccine and microchip clinics. They have pet food banks that they give out free pet food for those that need it. And they constantly are looking for donations and grants to help pet owners with their pets and to care for them. And that's one of the reasons we could partner together, for instance, in West Rehoboth, was, you know, they have some other grants they can pull from to fund the microchips and the vaccines that they distributed. And then we also can lend a hand with some of those things as well. So it's been a good partnership. All right, and if we look at animal numbers through the years, you can see in 2023, we took in over 4,500 animals just through Delaware Animal Services. And this has increased 29% since 2018. We did see a dip in everything during the COVID times, which was nice, but unfortunately it's all rebounded with a vengeance, and we're definitely seeing you know, some challenges across the country in terms of numbers of animals needing care. There are more animals that need to be sheltered. There are less people adopting. So we're working with Brandywine to continue to provide outstanding service and keep animals in the home whenever possible, if it's a suitable home, and shelter those that really need sheltering. All right, so budget implications. I think you have some of this in your, possibly in front of you. But since we met last time, we have seen sharp increase in costs, as you're probably used to across the board. But some of the key areas where we've seen increases are within our salaries, fleet, and shelter expenses. At the same time, we've had a demand for increase from population, for calls for service, and for animal intake. So all that is putting pressure on the cost, and we're looking at a $598,000 deficit for FY25. So as Gina mentioned, we've applied the population for 2022, which was an increase of a little over 8% in the top here. And then you down at the bottom here, you can see this is your current cost here. In 2025, this would be the total cost for the state, and then allocated according to population is $158,000 more for Sussex County for your total. And then we've increased, your total is over here, okay. And then we have a 3% increase for the following 2 years. So that is what we're looking for from a cost perspective. Again, we've been doing the per capita allocation since we started, and the other three governments are on board, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions of council? Questions of council? Mr. Costello, you have a question?
I do. Well, a comment.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. I just thought it would just be fair to share that on top of the excellent customer service that the department gives to our citizens, that we are also benefiting this from this agreement directly. Within the last year, the Office of Animal Services, they came and they provided animal safety training to all of our inspections and code enforcement staff, and we put it out there for anybody who might have wanted to receive that training. We met here in council. We'll probably talk for about 4 hours, got some great information on how to keep ourselves safe, not only in our work environment, but in our home environment. Also that our inspections and code enforcement work very closely with the Office of Animal Welfare in the field. As a matter of fact, some of the referrals that we have made on conditions that we found in the field led to some of the largest cases that they have in neglect and abuse in Sussex County. So we're very, very frequently letting them know what we're finding out there, and then they come in and take charge. And also on some cases where we need to gain access to a property but are faced with an aggressive animal, their staff have been very responsive to come out and assisting us so that our staff can do their jobs. So we totally support the work that they're doing in this county.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions of the council? Questions of council?
The only question I would have is, towards our director of finances, is we can accommodate this in the budget adequately?
Yes, it's in there. I mean, as I'm preparing the 25 budget, I'm aware of the increase, and I have the increase in there.
Does this money come out of transfer tax, or where does it go?
This is tax dollars. This is general fund tax dollars.
But it's not considered a public safety
issue.
That's
correct.
Any more questions to council? You have a motion, Ms. Jennings?
I do. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the MOU with the State of Delaware to enforce Delaware dog control and dangerous dog statutes as presented.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson. Second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mr. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Next.
All right. The next one is ARPA.
Thank you, sir.
So what I put up here is the timeline of ARPA. We've been talking about this for multiple years. They did release funds in 2021. I had become before council 2 years ago to come up with a recommendation on how to allocate those funds. I gave you an update a year ago, and then today is another annual update. And we have to have, what's very important is that red box on the screen. We must have all the funds committed. We can no longer reallocate at that point by the end of this calendar year. So that's a very important piece here. As a reminder, when we established the goals for allocation, we wanted to make sure, obviously, it meets all ARPA requirements, that the projects could be completed by the end of this calendar year. We didn't want to put anything that would grow government. These are just temporary funds, so people need to understand that once these funds are gone, they're gone. We wanted to align with council priorities, and again, what you have said over and over, affordable housing and adequate infrastructure are some of your priorities. And we didn't want to duplicate other efforts that we knew that the state was doing too. So the allocations have always, the dollar amounts have shifted, but the actual categories have stayed the same since the beginning. We've contributed to sewer infrastructure, affordable housing, other low-income services. We've given to nonprofit grants. We've done security upgrades to our sewer infrastructure, and those are IT security upgrades. We've added some EOC and EMS employees with this fund. We've added 4 in both of those departments. And we also supported the hospitality industry through our kitchen incubator. Now, I want to go into some of the successes that we have had. And a lot of those are our low-income projects. So the first one is our home buyer assistance. This is where we give assistance for down payments to get people into their homes. So you had allocated $900,000 for this program. We have completed 20 settlements. There is one pending and one pending application. And that's assisted with the families who made less than 65% AMI. And you can see the distribution on the type of families going into those homes. And we 10% are elderly, 20% is disabled. And you can see majority of them are female head of household. The next success story is our rehabilitation. Both of these programs are handled through Brandy's group at Community Development and Housing. They've spent $2 million. They repair homes and families again, make you 5% less than AMI. The projects involve emergency repairs, roofing, weatherization. They have completed 138 projects with this. They still have 23 projects under construction and 21 applications in process. So when this is all said and done with the funds that they already have allocated, there would be 182 homes that have been repaired in Sussex with these ARPA funds. Okay, and our third success that I wanted to touch on is housing sustainability. So in addition to ARPA, we had also received other federal funds through the CARES Act. We spent $326,000 on housing sustainability. That impacted 191 households, which is an average payment of $1,700 per household. And what this does is helps families not become homeless. So it helps with eviction or any utility shutoffs, such as water. We would step in, the nonprofits that we were helping would step in to provide the dollars so that they would not be evicted. Okay, so moving on to the dollar amounts. So as I said a few slides back, on the left are all the types of buckets that we decided to put money into. So wastewater infrastructure, the nonprofit grants, the security upgrades with sewer. You can see what the allocations were. We had gotten $45.5 million. The next column is looking at what contracts we have already committed to these projects. You can see we have $43.6 million already committed and expected to be spent through December 2024. So we're doing very good. There are some that we know some of the contracts did not come in as high as we thought. Some of the projects didn't succeed as much as we would want to. So I want to reallocate those funds by the end of this year and make sure that they are spent. So as you can see where those categories are, security, $500,000. Housing, these were for the development, bringing on some affordable housing units, assistance release, the kitchen incubator, and administration. It's not costing as much to operate as we thought we would. So moving those funds, my recommendation is to reallocate into 3 areas, really. It's low-income partnerships, which there's 2 recommendations there, and back to that rehabilitation piece where I showed you that we've already spent $2 million and how successful that's been. I would like to take the piece where we're getting from the housing piece for the contractors and move that to the rehabilitation piece. So going into a little more detail with the low income partners, where I said about $900,000 going in there. Food Bank had applied about 2 years ago through our nonprofit program for these ARPA funds. It has taken us some time on what we could make it qualify for ARPA. So my recommendation is now at this time to award them $750,000 of the ARPA fund specifically for food purchases. And then the second piece is to continue with the Housing Sustainability Assistance Program of $150,000. And what that does is continue those partnerships that we already created with the CARES Act through the Community Resource Center and the First State Community Action Agency. And again, work through Brandy's Community Housing Development Group. They would funnel this funding through to them and get those funds to families to help them with evictions or utility shutoffs. So the next steps for council is a motion to enter into an ARPA grant agreement with the food bank for the $750,000 if you so choose. We will open our last round of low-income housing development grants. That was that $5 million piece. We still have $2 million left, so we're going to open that up. That opens up April 1st. We will come back before council in May for you to vote on those grant applications once that application closes. So at this point, it's just a motion, or I'll take any questions.
Any questions to Gina?
What do you anticipate?
Yes. The question.
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. President. I was just wondering if what the food bank's intention is for the money, or if it's an open-ended grant, or.
No, it is specifically for food. It is not open-ended. So I will be requesting to show that. Well, they have to also show that they went out to bid for the food.
So the purchase of food. It's not for capital improvements.
No,
it's
just for the purchase of food specifically.
I'll make a motion to approve the grant with the food bank.
Okay. Well, do you have a motion?
I have a motion. It's just be it moved that the Sussex County Council agree to enter into a grant agreement with the food bank to provide $750,000 of ARPA fund to purchase food.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer. Second.
Second.
Who said that first?
I did.
Mr. Riley. Okay. Second, Mr. Riley. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Aaron Brewington. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. I'm here today to talk about stop-loss insurance and other basic and optional life insurances, disability, accident, death, and dismemberment. So stop-loss insurance is also known as excess insurance. I come here every year before you to provide what our quote is. It provides protection for self-insured employees by serving as a reimbursement mechanism for catastrophic claims. These are medical claims exceeding predetermined levels. Our current annual specific deductible is $295,000. Insurance Buyers Council, our consultant on benefits, completed an RFQ with our current stop-loss vendor, Highmark. The detailed analysis was included in your packets. IBC was able to negotiate a reduction in the original renewal we received from them from 12.49% to 8.98% and reported a very favorable renewal in the context of medical stop-loss policies. It is IBC's recommendation to accept Highmark's renewal and maintain the current specific deductible of $295,000 per claim with a $100,000 deductible. In addition, Hartford provided us on their basic and optional life insurance, short and long-term disability, accident, death, and dismemberment, another renewal increase of 0%. Our premiums have remained unchanged since 2021. IBC and HR's recommendation is to renew the existing contract with the option to extend on a year-to-year basis. The decision is also based upon the ongoing excellent customer service and support provided by their claims administration and account management team since 2012, since we've been partnered with them.
Do you have a motion or motions?
I have a motion, okay. And or any questions anyone may have?
Do the motion first and we'll come back to the questions.
Okay. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council renew its annual contract with Highmark for stop loss coverage at a rate per month of $32.36 for single coverage and $92.15 for family coverage with an annual specific deductible of $295,000 effective May 1st, 2024, and renew its contract with the Hartford for group life and disability benefits based on the existing premiums for a period of 1 year, ending in June 30th, 2025, with the option to extend on a year-to-year basis.
Pleasure, Council.
Move to adopt.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, questions on the motion? Any questions? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes, motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Robertson.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. I am here today to hopefully get the perimeter buffer ordinance. Oh, you need that, yeah, gotcha. That wasn't on. Get that introduced. We've talked about it at some length before, so I'm not going to go into it in a whole lot of detail this morning. Obviously, we're going to have public hearings in front of planning and zoning and county council. But as a brief overview, what it does is it pulls the buffer requirements out of the definition section of our subdivision ordinance and puts them in a new section within the subdivision ordinance. It also consolidates them as one set of standards for all buffers, whether it's just a regular subdivision or a cluster subdivision. So there's not two different types of buffers depending on what type of subdivision you're in. It also is more specific on the planning requirements and what to do if you have a situation where the buffer area is currently wooded versus a buffer area that is currently, you know, just farmed or tilled or whatever, with the goal being to preserve the woodlands that are in that buffer area so that they stay there and they're protected throughout the development and life of the subdivision. And to that, in that regard, if it is a wooded area that is the buffer, we've added a perimeter buffer protection area of 20 feet beyond the 30-foot wide buffer so that the roots aren't grubbed and the trees aren't disturbed. And all that is marked with silt fencing, ribbons, and signage so that everybody all the time knows where this would be. The other thing it does, and we've heard from some folks along the way about timing, it improves this timing and schedule of the buffer planning. So if it's a new buffer, for example, that has to be, well, even if it's woodland, it has to be preserved. But if it's a new buffer that's being planted, that has to be planted before the first building permit in that phase. And then they can't move on to another phase until that buffer is planted as well. And then on the back end, there's a two-year guarantee period after substantial completion is issued for that phase. So, you know, unlike what we see now, it really stretches out the time period that the trees are in the ground and growing before the developer is done and the guarantees and bonding is out of the picture. So the trees will be planted before the first building permit in that phase. Then all the roads and stuff go in, the houses all get built. Then when that's all done, they're going to come back to the county to get a substantial completion sign off. You know, and that might likely take a year or more just to get from point A to point B there, and then that starts the two-year guarantee with the bonding that remains in place. So, you know, we'll get the trees in earlier and they'll be protected longer, basically, through this ordinance. So that's a general overview of it. The ordinance is page-wise, it's, I think, 25 pages long. That's because we deleted all the current definitions. We added that new section. And then, as I mentioned in the cover memo, the reference to vegetated buffer or perimeter buffer sort of are sprinkled throughout the code. For example, they're in our SCRP requirements, and so every time that was mentioned, we had to pull that in. The other thing I do want to just remind everybody, this applies to subdivisions and it applies to RPCs, but like our prior buffers, it also can apply to residential conditional uses. That's actually the very last section in here. So as you know, with a residential conditional use, we have the ability to impose conditions. The code specifically says that this is one of them. That's it in a nutshell. So, you know, I'm willing to go into more detail, but we have talked about this at length. Oh, Mr. Whitehouse did provide some slides. This is the example of the perimeter buffer where there is existing woodlands, and that's sort of the darker shaded green. And you can see that's 30 feet wide, and then there would be the 20-foot minimum perimeter buffer protection area. Beyond that is, as I mentioned, the silt facing. And then we have signage at 100-foot intervals. The reason we did that at that distance is that way in a cluster subdivision, somebody would always see a sign no matter where your lot is. We didn't want to make it too large, but we didn't want to make it overburdensome and too small. And the other thing I should add, which kind of shows up here, this is actually a fairly standard representation of a subdivision, you know, because we don't usually have linear streets. So the lots sort of generally curve around what is the perimeter of the prop. But the perimeter buffer and the perimeter buffer protection area still counts towards your open space calculations for a subdivision. So there's no penalty there in terms of open space. And with the cluster subdivisions, we're running at about 45 to 50% open space generally, I think, Mr. Whitehouse, would you say? Yeah. So, you know, that's not a fine line that we're, you know, kind of shading towards with the open space. I think we're in good shape with that. So,
can I ask a question about this slide?
Certainly.
You back up the slide that was just up there.
Oh.
I had asked this question, and I think I remember the answer you gave. So the extra 20-foot protection area, did that have the effect of creating an additional setback of the lot, the building envelope, or not the building envelope, the lot line, the rear yard lot line? Did that push the design that they had to move that additional 20 feet away from the perimeter buffer in dark green?
Yes.
Is that what the net effect was?
Yeah. So, well, however you want to call it, you can't have any lot lines within that perimeter buffer area. So, you know, depending on the design of the property, that lot line is going to be outside of that.
So by creating the protection area, you in effect move the lots further away from the protected buffer.
That's correct.
What the net effect is?
Yeah, yes. Okay. So I guess to, and I don't know if this is the direction you're going with this, but a couple of things we looked at early on this is, one, when construction's happening, you know, we'd get contractors that were disturbing the wooded buffer areas, you know, and so that perimeter buffer protection area is designed to create more separation between, you know, the big front end loaders or whatever that they're doing site work with and the trees. So that's one part of it. The other part, I don't know if Mr. Lawson or Mr. Whitehouse had the slides, where the lots were creeping into the buffer areas also. So that buffer area actually creates a bigger separation between those lots and the trees you want to preserve.
Any more questions?
Yeah, I have another question.
Mr. Schaefer.
Has there been any more thought giving to the issue that we've been, particularly Mr. Whitehouse and I, have been in Tidewater Landing? We have a community that's being built over a number of years, and we still don't have buffers in. Has there been any more consideration to help address that issue?
I'm happy to assist that one. So this, the wording of this ordinance actually caters for that scenario by adding greater precision as to when buffers are to be delivered, and also it has enhanced enforcement measures and protections. So in the drafting of this, we've catered for that. So.
Yeah, that was actually kind of that's under the current requirements, but that was actually a good tool to look at. How do we avoid that happening again? So this ordinance takes care of that.
Any more questions? You want to read your short title? Or Mr. Moore, you can read your title.
Because it does touch on a lot of sections. It's an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Articles 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6, Sections 99-5, 99-6, 99-23, 99-26, 99-27, 99-30, 99-31, and 99-32, and by adding a new section 99-21A and Chapter 115, Articles 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 28, Sections 115-20, 115-25, 115-29, 115-37, 115-45, 115-53, and 115-28 regarding perimeter buffers around residential development.
You sure you got all your section there you wanted?
I hope so. Yeah.
Anybody want to introduce this ordinance?
No, I'll introduce it.
Mr. Riley, introduce the ordinance.
And as we said, that starts gets us on the calendar for planning and zoning first, and then also, obviously, you all once we have a recommendation for planning and zoning.
Thank you for all your work on this.
Yeah,
good work.
Thank you.
Mr. Whitehouse.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. County Council may remember the topic of accessory dwelling units from the presentation that was held before council and the discussion council held at its meeting at the end of January. Following that discussion by council, staff have worked with Mr. Robertson to prepare a draft ordinance, and that ordinance is included in your paperless packet for potential discussion and introduction. To provide a quick summary, there is a memo from Mr. Robertson included in your paperless packet. What the ordinance does is it replaces the definition of garage studio apartment, which is what we talked about, that exists currently in code, and replaces it with a new definition. And the new definition of an accessory dwelling unit would be a self-contained dwelling unit that is secondary to the principal dwelling unit on a property and includes independent living facilities such as a separate entrance, bathroom, and kitchen. The dwelling unit may be attached to or detached from the primary dwelling on the property. Accessory dwelling units do not include duplexes, tourist homes, servant quarters, or guest homes. And then to provide a quick overview, that in addition to changing that definition, the proposed ordinance would make an accessory dwelling unit, an ADU, a permitted use on a property in the residential zoning districts, subject to the six following criteria. And number one is that a fee shall be paid to the county in an amount to be determined by the county council. Number two is that the applicant shall submit a survey signed and sealed by a surveyor licensed in the state of Delaware to the Director of Planning and Zoning, showing the location of the accessory dwelling unit and the floor area of both the accessory dwelling unit and the single family dwelling as well, so that we can see what the extent of coverage is on the lot. And then three, that no accessory dwelling unit shall have a floor area that is greater than 1,000 square feet, and that an accessory dwelling unit shall not be larger than 50% of the floor area of the single family dwelling unit located on the same lot, and also that an accessory dwelling unit shall not have a lot coverage that is greater than 50%. And the intent, Mr. President, is that the survey would allow staff to analyse that and compare the main dwelling plus the accessory dwelling units and see where they are in relation to setbacks and their overall coverage.
One thing on that, the size requirements, you know, we have those because we don't want these to become essentially permitted duplexes on a lot. You know, they're supposed to be accessory dwelling units, not, you know, two single-family homes on a lot. And so that's why we have those size requirements and lot coverage and things.
The fourth requirement, Mr. President, is that there shall be at least one parking space set aside for an accessory dwelling unit, and that has to be within the lot that it's associated with. And number five is that the accessory dwelling unit shall comply with the same setbacks as the primary single-family dwelling located on the same lot, so it wouldn't benefit from the small lots ordinance and couldn't be as close as 5 feet, and that an accessory dwelling shall be placed behind the primary single-family dwelling on the same lot and maintain one half of the single-family dwelling's actual side and rear setbacks, and which is similar to a Kent County requirement. And then six is that no accessory dwelling unit shall be constructed or placed on a lot that is smaller than one half acre in size. And the intent of this, Mr. President, is it avoids the smaller lot and cluster subdivisions where we've deliberately created smaller lots, especially in those MR and GR zoning districts where there might not be sufficient room to place an ADU, especially in those situations where there may not be enough room for additional parking. And essentially, I mean, that is the ordinance. And obviously the ordinance itself goes into greater detail, but I'm happy to answer any questions, but unless there are any questions, we have a potential ordinance for your introduction.
Any questions, Mr. Whitehouse? Mrs. Green.
So when moving it to 1,000 square feet, does 1,200 stretch you too far?
It's currently 800, and yes. The intent of the number is to design something that's genuinely an accessory to the main house and isn't significantly larger than a dwelling. I think there's not a great deal of difference between 1,000 and 1,200 square feet. So if that's council's wish, that wouldn't significantly undermine the objective of what we're trying to achieve.
This does help with having to go for a variance. So currently, you know, 800, then they have to go get a variance. So now, of course, we move it to 1,000. We're still going to maybe have those variances. So we want to make sure that everybody's doing what they want to do. We don't want variance problems, so that this way would that.
This, I would think this would eliminate a lot of variances.
Correct.
That's going to eliminate. Can we eliminate all of them? We go to 12. Can we eliminate?
How about a guy want 13?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the number going to be, right? Yeah. We're going to end up.
You know, let's have a happy medium so that we're addressing the variances by 90% or 80, you know, what is our percent? We want to make sure we're not coming back for that little variance. Does the 1,200 help you in any way on that?
I would say that from off the top of my head, from memory, those variances that we've seen where folks have gone to the Board of Adjustment requested variances from the 800 square foot requirement, I don't think we've seen anyone requesting 1,200. I think we've only sought like minimal variances of the sort of 1,000 range, but if council wished it to be 1,200, then it wouldn't significantly undermine the objective of what we're trying to achieve. So
it doesn't stretch you too much if we did the
1,200. I think it would be workable. 1,000 seems a round number, but yeah. If 1,200 allows that additional flexibility, that's something that can be accommodated.
It's still going to be governed by that 50% of lot area and lot coverage. You know?
Sure.
So you're always going to have that, plus all the setback requirements.
Any more questions?
I have a question.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hudson.
The fees. I see where it's there's a hatch mark where the $50 thing is crossed out. What do you want to do with the fee? Where do you want to go with it?
So the fee would no longer be living in the code. Right now, a lot of fees are actually contained in Chapter 115, but over the last few years, staff have been working to move them into a separate fee schedule that allows them to be updated with it slightly more easily in their current process.
Okay.
At the moment, $50 is the fee for the current process, and that's just to notify the neighbors. That has not been revisited in a few years. I would suggest that it match the actual Board of Adjustment fee, but that's something that we could review separately. We need to determine how much work's involved in actually reviewing these, getting the survey, obtaining the survey, issuing the decision. I would suggest that it be similar to our Board of Adjustment fee, because essentially staff would be administratively performing that same similar process, just without the public hearing. So I would suggest that at a minimum it be increased from 50 to 150, but the Board of Adjustment fees have also been increased potentially 400 to 500.
Yep.
So at a minimum, I'd suggest it be 150, but that may not cover the cost associated with staff reviewing them. So,
okay. Thank you.
One thing, too, that Mr. Wettles didn't touch on is for the public and, of course, you all, but this is just the county zoning code. You know, if there's private deed restrictions in a development, those would be privately enforceable, you know, based on whatever rules that development has. This is only the county code that sets up the possibility.
Any more questions? Who wants to read this one?
Well, on this one, and I apologize, it might be an error unless Mr. Whitehouse has the ordinance. It was my understanding that we were just going to talk about the review of it, but Mr. Whitehouse has it, so I will read the ordinance.
Well, because what Mrs. Green's subject was certainly can be addressed at either one of the two hearings, planning and zoning or county council hearings, to change anything in the
absolutely
ordinance.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's, yeah, because it's the same as the other one where we'll have a hearing
sure.
again at P&Z and before you. So it is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 110, Article 3, because there was one, let me back up before I read it. There was one part of the sewer code that dealt with, that we wanted to clarify as to whether these were an additional EDU or whatever in the sewer code. So there's one section in Chapter 110 that was touched on this. So again, the short title is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 110, Article 3, Sections 109, and Chapter 115, Articles 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 27, sections 115.4, 115-20, 115-23, 115-29, 115-32, 115-40, 115-48, 115-53, and 115-56, 115-64, and 115-210 regarding accessory dwelling units.
I would just say, just for so we're all hearing the same thing, you said first section 109, it's section 110-9.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 110-9, yes.
So it's on, and it's in the public record, so there's no question.
That's right. I apologize for that. Thanks for
correcting that. No, that's the... Yeah. Anyone want to introduce the ordinance?
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Raleigh, he's on the ordinance introduction today. Mr. Raleigh introduces it.
Mr. Glad to get these settled.
Mr. President, can I add one point to this effort? There is a piece of legislation circulating through the state related to accessory dwelling units. Part of that legislation will require local municipalities in all three counties to have a by right accessory dwelling unit. We're certainly watching that legislation. It's not, we're not sure what the fate of that legislation is, and we're not sure the timing of this bill, that the ordinance you just introduced. So we'll be monitoring both. It's our hope that our accessory dwelling unit gets approved in time, and hopefully the legislation that's being circulated and does not get approved.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Harmer, come on down.
Good morning.
Morning.
In 2019, County Council approved moving forward with the Piney Neck Regional Wastewater Facility Diversion Transmission System Project. Which will eliminate or repurpose the Piney Neck wastewater facility by diverting all flow to the South Coastal facility. In 2020, County Council approved engaging an engineering consultant for the project. At this point, we've concluded the acquisition of all easements and have completed a preliminary alignment for the diversion pipe. So due to the complexities on numerous easements and DelDOT road crossings that we've engaged on, and the commitments associated with those easements, we're proposing a design-build process that will, and I worked with Gina to review the rules around that. And we've concluded that our project goals are best, met with a design-build process, progressive design-build process. The memo in your packages explains some of the details of the process, and it starts out with a request for qualifications, and then we'll whittle down the bidders to a couple firms, and then we'll request a request for proposals, and the proposals get into the details of the design-build process, their approach to it, and our team, and then we'll whittle that down to one firm, which will proceed with the the work. Many utilities are proceeding with the design-build process, progressive or just a plain old design-build process, because it brings a more collaborative approach to infrastructure, and a lot of contractors, or many contractors, are pursuing owners that do the design-build process. There's one utility I'm aware of that has told me that they're going direct to all their pipe work is going to be design-build, and they are not local to Delaware, but they're in the area. So I have a motion, barring any questions or to propose.
Why don't you read your motion and we'll see about questions.
All right. Be it moved, based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department, that County Council authorize the County Engineer to develop a two-step quality-based selection request for proposals to establish a design-build contract for the Piney Neck Regional Wastewater Facility Diversion Transmission System Project.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer, seconded.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
John Ashman, come on down.
All right.
Morning.
Good morning, sir.
So you've seen this a few times. This is what we're calling our South Greenwood area. Just some background, permission to prepare and post notices was granted on December 5th of 2023, and our public hearing on the boundary was held on January 23rd of 2024. Council approved the boundary on February 20th of 2024, and a referendum date was set and done by absentee ballot only based on the size of the area. that ballot deadline was February 29th of 2024 at noon, and both properties returned ballots, and the vote was unanimous, two owners in favor and none opposed, which is not a surprise.
Hard to believe.
Therefore, we have a resolution declaring the area for your consideration. It's a resolution for the South Greenwood area of the Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District declared under the provisions of Title IX, Chapter 65 of the Delaware Code.
Pleasure, Council. Motion, Mrs. Green, seconded.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Medlars.
He's
come
coming.
Come right on down here, young man.
He's coming.
He's already on his way.
Oh, he's on his way. He's moving.
Getting fast.
Oh, yeah, he is getting faster. He is getting faster.
He needs a couple first.
He's getting back in pickleball mode. Yeah.
That will not happen. Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. We're back on the Lagoon Solar for Wolf Neck. So this project is now one of the projects I started under my tenure. Glad to wrap it up, and you will also hear back from us. We're currently advertising the companion piece, which is the switchboard, which associated with the electric upgrades on the Wolf Neck project that's advertised right now and will be bid in the next few weeks. That is the last ERA component. This one here is completely self-funded by the, that actually goes through the BIL process and the Inflation Reduction Act. That's where these funds are coming from, because These projects are funded through tax rebates on the parties which finance these projects. So we have no cost in it. We get all the proceeds. We get the lease payments. We get the payments for the options. And we now also have a decommissioning agreement. That was one of the requirements we put in the RFP. And that is also included. So once we work through all these various details, there's actually four components which require the county council execution. One of the decommissioning also requires, we put in there that it had to be our bank. So once we get the president signature on there, we will then approach M&T. And Ms. Walls has been talking to them, so they will be signing the decommissioning agreement. So once all these documents are executed, they have 3 years. They expect Nouria Energy. They've teamed up now in a joint venture with the firm from Maryland, which you've seen a few times before you doing commercial solar projects,
right.
Chatterton. So they have formed the joint venture. They expect to have the project under design, fully designed and permitted and approved by the Public Service Commission within 12 months. So we do not expect to have another option year. So the first option year should be sufficient, which is great, because that will bring the two projects, our electric project and their project, together in the same timeline, which would allow us to do the bio removal in the following year.
Oh,
so that's good. So that, you know, we were trying to compress the bio removal and try to get that within 2 years. So I will be watching that from the sidelines. But that's definitely, I'm pretty happy how these timelines come together.
Good.
And by the way, last comment on the error. We received the bids. You will see me return on April 9th with the award for the loop at the Inland Base. Remember, that's the conduit loop. And between the Inland Base grading and wetland projects, the conduit loop, and the electric improvement at Wolf Neck, all the ARPA funds will be fully committed this spring.
Good.
So.
Good.
That's definitely looking forward. So I do have a motion.
Please read your motion.
Be removed based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department that County Council approve the solar energy lease and easement agreement with addendum, the memorandum of solar energy lease and easement agreement, as well as the decommissioning funding agreement with Nouria Chatterton Joint Venture LLC as presented.
Pleasure, Council.
Forgotten.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second. Mr. Schaefer. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
That puts 5 megawatts on the grid.
Yes.
That's quite a bit.
That's good. thank you, Hans.
And saves us a good bit of lineup.
Introduction, proposing ordinance, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have one. It's in Mr. Hudson's district. An ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from a C1 general commercial district, a CR1 commercial residential district, and an AR1 agricultural residential district to a C1 general commercial district, a CR1 commercial residential district, and a C3 heavy commercial district for a certain parcel of land lying in Dagsboro 100, Sussex County, containing 21.11 acres more or less.
I'll introduce it.
Hudson introduced it.
And that is all, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Council member comments. Council member comments, anybody? I do have one thing. I want to congratulate our clerk, Ms. Torbert, on achieving her Master Municipal Clerk degree.
There it is.
Congratulations. I know it took extra training and that kind of stuff and extra classes, but thank you for doing that, which makes us a better county. So we appreciate that very much. Entertain a motion to go to executive session for land acquisition, personnel, job documents, qualifications, and pending potential litigation.
Move.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Number
one. Second. Mr. Schaefer, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. We're now in executive session for land acquisition, personnel,